Business Matters in association with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. For a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT in Financial Services. Call 91 86206 or email donald.hannigan at atu.ie today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Business Matters on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. My guest this week is Axel Pavlik, who is originally from Germany but who now lives in Port Salon. 2 years ago, he began making high-end and stunningly attractive chocolates, and his business has really taken off. His brand is known as the Chocolate Man from Donegal, the idea being hatched after this reference to him by Des Gallen of the Blue Goat Artisan Cafe in Remelton. Axel handcrafts his chocolates in the Old School Community Centre in Kerrykeel. So coming up, we'll hear about how he first learned about Donegal, his first trip here, his background in the internet industry, the pandemic, and more recently, his new business venture here in Donegal. Well, what a story. Axel, let's go back a little bit in time. First of all, you're from Germany. You're now living in Donegal, well settled, have your own business here. But let's go back to how on earth did you come to Donegal and how did Donegal first appear on your radar?
Right. In school, in the good old times, we had what I found a very good English teacher. She, at some point, did half a year on the Troubles. And that was late 70s, I think. And that brought the island of Ireland onto my horizon. I said, oh, this is interesting. I can relate to that. And just after school, immediately, I took my girlfriend and we went on a tour of Ireland. Sadly, the wrong way around. We started in Dublin, went south. And at the end, we ended up in Donegal. And we said, like, oh, this is different. This is a bit rougher, a bit more, I don't know, different just. Mm. And, okay, that was the holiday. We went back home. And that was that for a couple of years. And then a friend of mine went back to teach German. I visited him. That was great. My then girlfriend, no wife, came with, and I said, oh, it's Ireland. It's mild. It's lovely. It's around Easter. You don't need many clothes because it's mild. Yeah, no, it was snowing. She looked at me funny. We were in Dublin. It was really, really smoky. It was in 88. Mm. Lots of that stuff around still. And we were not too chuffed by that. And then we just drove across country, Galway, stood at a traffic light. Somebody comes cycling by, a girl. She knows my friend Rainer. And they were talking, oh, German friends here. Oh, you have German friends here. Then you should go to Kilkar, to that hostel that is run by a little man called Paddy. Of course, right? And we go, oh, yeah, we do that. And then we go to the hostel. And he has cookies and he has tea for you. Okay, we do that. There is Paddy. And we sit on his couch, and my then girlfriend goes, ask him, does he have room for us? Does he have beds for us? Coffee and or tea and biscuits first. And we got tea and biscuits and all that. It was fantastic. He asked us when we would be back in the evening. Said, oh, is there a curfew? I don't know. I mean, it depends on when the pubs close. And why are you asking? Is that so? Are you closing the door? I said, no, I want to put hot water bottles in your beds. Like, what? And he did that, and we came back, and we thought he was just joking. So that didn't break our heart, but this is such a nice place, such a nice set of people. We came back again and again and again, made friends. So that was the late 80s, early 90s. I stopped working in the company that I set up, sort of running parts of the internet in Germany in the early 90s. The kids are ready, or the oldest is ready for school, and we go, oh, if we put him into German school now, that's the end of it. Then we are settled in Germany. Let's do something crazy. And we went to Ireland. And we found a small national school down in Ballymore, in Marble Hill. And settled there for a while. I was doing country markets together. That was just newly set up. I would get up 6 o'clock on the Saturday morning, bake waffles, and pack them and put them on the country market.
So you're coming from a background with computers and internet.
Yeah.
So this is a big life change.
It was a big life change. My wife didn't necessarily like it that much because, oh, suddenly we are in remote rural Donegal. Oh, is there work? Oh, did we think of that? Maybe not to the end. Well, we survived. My wife is a nurse, thankful. There was a job for her, and I did the country market stuff, and just I had lots of fun. And she goes, is this sustainable? And I say, the roof is not leaking, the kids have fun, we get along, it's fine, it's a big holiday, it's a big adventure. She goes, I don't know.
And did you come from an urban background in Germany?
Yes, very much. We met in the northwest, sort of around the Ruhrgebiet. Dortmund, Essen, Duisburg, Gelsenkirchen, Bochum. She was my boss once in a hospital. I was doing my civilian service there, and there she was. Very, very urban, and this was different. It was really, really nice, but very different. So after a while, I got a phone call from an ex-colleague of mine who knew that we were here, that I didn't formally work. And he says, well, the board is looking for a new CEO, and would you be interested? And I go, I know what you're talking about, but it's nice here. I talk to Inge, so my wife. And I did talk to Inge, and she goes, yeah, you go. Like, oh?
Quick decision.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, she was my boss, right? So I have to go. And I went, and I said, oh, well, they find out I know nothing after a year, and then they throw me out anyway. I can do that. And yeah, after a year, they were all in Holland with me. So that was settling in Ireland for us for a while.
And what field of business was this CEO position?
That was, again, the internet. So they remembered me from previous times and was running a not-for-profit in the end with 250 people serving the membership in, what was it? So Europe, the Middle East, and parts of Central Asia, giving out internet addresses. So back to the internet, I did that. That was a fantastic job. Lots of travel involved and meeting lots of nice people and doing sort of bottom-up work.
You know? And did you own your place here in Donegal at this time? Did you sell it or what happened? You went back to over to Holland, was it?
We had a rental here and we were about to settle into another place when the Holland thing happened. And of course that went on for a couple of months, and then the family came over because it's nicer that way. And so we were in Holland, and we were there for about 20 years. And then I stopped working at that job. That was in 2019. And I was, oh, well, then my wife was back here again. So we were both here and there visiting each other. So it was sort of two bases. And I thought, oh, I'll come over here. And then this pandemic thing happened. I was stuck in Amsterdam. I did a little bit of travel, and then I got into Amsterdam with the last flight they would do from Montreal, it was. And then there was no flats and no ferries. And my wife on the phone, on Skype, saying, what are your plans? When are you coming? There are no plans. Nobody has any plans. And a couple of months later, that then happened. I came over here. I had a course booked in Ballymaloe, down in Shanagarry, Macau. Very nice. I like cooking, and did that. And then I sat there in Port Salon and thought about the pandemic and future and what would we do? What do I do with my food ideas? I thought, maybe opening a deli or a cafe would be nice, but not in a pandemic. So that never happened. And then I watched too much Netflix and fell into the chocolate hole. I found chocolate and thought, oh, this is interesting, technically challenging. Let me see whether I can do that.
And did you have growing up, was there any interest in chocolate, or was there a fascination there at all, or where did this interest really come out of?
No, I mean, every child eats chocolate, so I did that. But no, there was no particular interest. It's more the food thing that I found interesting after my 20s or 30s. Mm. And I just literally, we had one demonstration in Ballymaloe on chocolate tempering, but that was it. And I thought, oh yeah, there's that. I don't know. Didn't really feel that interested. But I saw that one show on TV, and then there's YouTube, and there's lots of nice little videos there. And oh, this is how you could do that. And I tried it out just because I could try it out. And it sort of worked easier than I thought. And then, of course, the living room table is full of chocolates. And after 2 weeks, everybody goes, not more chocolate, please. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, maybe the neighbor wants some. And then neighbors wanted some. And then I thought, oh, longer term, there was this country market in Dunfermline that we did in the 90s. They are still there. I wonder, would that be an outlet for the crazy chocolate?
And was this more like a hobby, or was it a, like, how much on a financial point do you think this is a business?
This is really, really strange. It started as, I want to see whether I can do this. Like, I want to cook a lasagna to see whether I can, I want to make noodles and see, you know. And this was a chocolate as well, and they turned out pretty, and I could do them. And then I thought, maybe the country market wants me back after all those years. And maybe there is sort of a baby business in there, sort of. And I just did that, and that worked okay. Okay, the chocolates are not cheap, but it worked. And then my wife has a friend, another friend from the 90s still. They're still around. And one of them, Francis Spears, is running Amelia's in Letterkenny. And she said, I hear you're making chocolate. Can I have some to sell them? So, yeah, sure. And they sell. It's amazing.
So the feedback from the word go was very, very positive.
It was positive feedback. I just didn't expect it to happen like that. I was just making my chocolates, right? Mm. And so I started now 2 years ago on a very small scale, figuring it all out. How do I package those things once I have them? How do I send them around the world without them melting or falling over and being smashed on the way? Selling them locally on the market is fun in the shops. And then Des from the Blue Goat called me the Chocolate Man. Mm-hmm. And then somebody said, oh, that's actually maybe the Donegal Chocolate Man. Maybe there's a brand in there. And that's what it became. The whole setup here in the community center in Carrickeel is very beneficial in that I pay for the time that I use the kitchen. So if I don't use it much, I don't pay much. So that's friendly for basically an incubator for a small business like this. And last year I started to think of it as a business, actually. Mm. And I'm amazed to say that it was self-financing. You know, I threw in a couple of euros to buy some chocolate and some molds and a little bit of equipment and use the home microwave, and you can make chocolates with that. Yeah. And then you grow a little bit, and then you get a melter machine once you have the funds for that, and that was great. And I see, speaking of small businesses in Donegal, there's a lot of support in Ireland generally, with the local enterprise offices all over the place. There's a lot of support. There is like little marketing initiatives like the Food Coast. And I'm starting to get a grip on like what's happening. A friend at the country market down in Ramelton said, you need to go to People's Market, Strandhill People's Market. Yeah, that's what it's called, right? And I said, oh, I never heard of that. I went there, it was great. Now I sell in Strandhill.
This is in Sligo, yes.
In Sligo, in the airplane hangar. And it's fantastic. It's great footfall, slightly different kind of people, more tourists than up here possibly. And it's just a nicely weird crowd of people, mm-hmm. like from the original hippies from the 60s, still walking around. To like younger people and goths and punks and whatnot, and like normal people too. Fantastic. It's really fun. I did not see that coming from my other job in tech, that I would have fun selling things to people. I always said, I'm not a salesperson. I don't want to push anything on anybody. I'm happy to tell them about our services or the product or whatever. And now at the market, I see the immediate feedback. Mm. I can't also, my instinct always was, oh, the team that's doing a great job, I don't really know what I'm doing here. I can't do this anymore. This is just me. So,
and if we just go back to the beginning and making your first chocolates here in Donegal, this started at home in the kitchen, and what was the first one? What was the flavour, or what was the initial one? Do we still have it, or did you develop it from an original recipe?
I had a lovely recipe that was cardamom-infused orange ganache with the crumble in there. That was really nice. My wife loved it too. That had an issue. It got moldy really quick. There's just too much orange juice and cream in there, and then there's lots of water activity in the bonbon, and that then starts to mold. Things you learn, and then you start reading about it, and then you learn, oh, you need to control the water amount in the water activity in the bonbon. So now we don't have that anymore because it has a shelf life of maybe 3 weeks, and the shops want more. Yeah. So all these here on the table, that you can eat, by the way, too, have shelf life of 6 months. Now I have the lime there that is limey. And like I said, I like chocolate. I like chocolate bonbons. They should be nice, but they shouldn't be boring on the inside. And often you get something that is vaguely chocolatey, but maybe a hint of something. I don't do hints. I do like real taste. Obviously, the salted caramel is something that everybody loves. There's an espresso gel and a coffee ganache in that one. There's the lime that is actually a bit sour. Blueberry and almond butter and whiskey. So I'm cooperating also with Sliblik Distillery in Adra.
Yeah.
And I have a box with the whiskies, or the whiskey and the gin and the vodka, or a box of like the three different gins that Moira makes over there. And yeah, it's the Donegal branding that is strong, and that is apparently very popular. So they sell the chocolates as well.
I'm with Axel Pavlik here in Kerrykeel, and we're talking about his business. Join us again after this break.
Business Matters with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. If you're looking for a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT and Financial Services. Take the next step in your career by contacting the Exec Ed Coordinator on 9186206 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Business Matters on Highland Radio with Chris Ashmore. I've been speaking with German native Axel Pavlik, who, after a career in the internet industry, which included a lot of travel, is now residing in Donegal, where he has established his own little company with the brand being called the Chocolate Man from Donegal. We've heard about his background and how he started the business. Let's hear now a little bit more about these fine chocolates, which really are a work of art. Looking at some of the chocolates, one of the things that strikes me first, you know, visually, they are absolutely stunning. And given all your travels over the years, were you a person who maybe have taken on board chocolates around the world and had a little interest?
Actually, not that much. I'm telling my wife when she's baking, I want fruit. I don't want all the sweet stuff. So actually, that is something that I'm doing with my chocolates. I basically, how I started this is I fell into a chocolate hole on YouTube and on Netflix after doing a three-month course on cooking in Ballymaloe, and just wanted to try out whether I could make that. And I apparently can make that. It's not that difficult if you know how to do it. So I want them to be pretty, of course, on the outside, and I want them to be tasty and exciting on the inside. So I don't make them just sweet. The salted caramel is salted caramel. That's attractive, I think, for 80% of humanity. But there is the lime chocolate that has quite a bit of lime juice in the ganache, and people go, oh, there is actually lime in there. I can taste that. Or the coffee. It has espresso gel on the top and has a coffee ganache underneath and a little bit of coffee grinds in there as well. So it's real. The whiskey has whiskey in it. I like fruity stuff. I do a raspberry gel on, what do you call it, tahini and gold chocolate ganache or gianduja. And people eat that and say, oh,
Well, my reaction was, this is incredible. This is quite different. You know, there's a lot of small chocolate companies in Ireland,
yes.
and there's a lot of them pitching for the supermarkets and a relatively mass market. And then you have the specialist ones, and these definitely small fall into that specialist category. So tell me your range now. How many different types would you do?
I probably do regularly about 20 different tastes. I have what I call the favorites box that has a salted caramel, the lime, a blueberry, the coffee, the vanilla. That's 5 different ones. Then I do have a vegan set as well, which doesn't sell so much because when you say vegan, people go, ooh. So I say, oh, it's dairy-free. Different tastes there as well. I do the Sleevelee Corporation, with the distillery. That's whiskey and vodka and gin, or the three gins, or the three whiskeys. And so that's sort of the core set. I aim for a shelf life of 6 months so that the shops actually want them and have them there. And then I do things in between that I find interesting and exciting, and oh, new design or a new taste, and see how that goes.
So are you always working on a new type to come in?
Yes. I have my cupboards full of stuff that I want to use, and my luxury problem is, oh, I don't have time for that because I have to make the standard sets that people want to buy of me. So I'm also trying to find a way to be more efficient, to produce a little bit more in less time without going all commercial industrial. It needs to be a small place. I want it to be sort of the artisanal chocolate tea type thing. So I need to find the time to experiment and do new things and structurally. But it's a small growing business. I have to do some bookkeeping too. Yeah. I have to learn that. Yeah. That is interesting.
Now, it's obviously a luxury product. It has a premium price. The packaging is fantastic, and the brand name, we've mentioned it, the Chocolate Man from Donegal, and the image on the box, you know, it's very striking. Who was behind the design?
Yeah, again, somebody I met at the country market in Romelton. Sarah, she has her own business, and her partner, he draws and she does graphics. She has very nice postcards of Donegal sites. And I like her style, so I asked her, could you do something for me? And she comes up with it. And so it's, again, it's the small businesses working together and off each other that is really exciting. I really, really like that. Same here with the community center. It's a community center. All sorts of courses are running now that the pandemic is pretty much over. People are coming together again. I found it and I saw this kitchen. The kitchen has the proper size for me. Activities are mostly in the evening when I'm gone again. And anyway, it's mostly coffee making and, you know. So I can have the kitchen during the day. And without them, I wouldn't be where I am. Of course, I am now starting to look for a slightly bigger place where I have a bit more storage and slightly more professional air conditioning and the like. So if anybody has a shed in the backyard or knows of a small professional kitchen, please let me know. I want to grow a little bit.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I want to stay the 1-3-man business that I'm currently in.
And to get from raw ingredients to the finished product, the time scale, how much work is there involved in bringing what you do a batch at a time, is it? Or
you can do that rather quickly, like I did in the beginning. Basically, you need a mold to pour the chocolate into and out of. So you have the shell, then you fill the shell, then you cap the whole thing, and it's a bonbon, then it unmolds, hopefully, and then you can do it within a day. But it's much better and much shinier if you do the chocolate cacao, the cacao butter, the colored cacao butter painting in the mold first. Like I just started with this one earlier. There's going to be the coffee, that's sort of the silver things there. So you paint that, let that crystallize overnight. Then it gets really nice and shiny. Then you pour in the chocolate for the shells. Let that crystallize again. The next day, second day, then you can fill that. Then the ganache you should also let crystallize overnight, ideally. And then on the third day, you go in and cap it, like close the chocolate, and wait a little while until it crystallizes again, and then you can unmold it. And if everything goes well, it comes out, and it's really shiny and pretty. If it doesn't go so well, because maybe the room was too warm or too humid, sometimes the glossiness and the prettiness stays behind in the mold, and out comes the naked chocolate. That's then very sad. Mm. But you figure those things out over time. You find out what to do and what not to do. For instance, the overnight crystallization of the paint, of the not cacao butter, that's something that I heard about like a year into the business. And I tried that, and yes, they do get prettier that way. Really? And they were not ugly before, but you know, those little twists and things.
And the local market, so we've Dunfanaghy, local suppliers, Strandhill. So how far from Donegal is the Chocolate Man products going?
Regularly, of course, throughout Donegal, I have one outlet in Dublin. A florist, actually. And otherwise, Strandhill People's Market is 2-hour drive away, it's not too far away. I do sell online as well. All through Ireland, mostly. For my old times, I have friends all over the world, so I send chocolates all over the world, but not into the hot areas. I tried a couple of times into Australia in their winter, but they arrived slightly molten or as chocolate soup. So that is very sad. So yeah, the hot countries are out.
Yeah. Now you do have a website and people can order online. The packaging and how they're preserved for online, it's a big area for you.
Yeah, that was weird. So you have your chocolates and you want to send them around the world. How to do that? So I got some similar boxes like these. It's not the high-end packaging. You can have like really, really fancy boxes, but then you pay a lot of money for the boxes alone. I want to have really fancy chocolates, but in reasonable price boxes. So I got a box, put some chocolates in, and I was amazed. They already look more professional. Then I start sending them around, and what I see happening is that they flip around in the little compartments. Oh, how can I prevent that? I get this little cupcase wrappers and sit them in there. That sort of works, but not really, because they're still too flat and they still flip over. So now the chocolates are just a little bit higher, so they can't flip over in there. Then you need, the exterior packaging and the filling material and things like that. I am no expert, and it took me, months to find websites so the packaging now that I'm using mostly comes actually from Holland in sort of reasonably sized batches that I can afford. Otherwise you can have them made for you in places like China, like also very bespoke and very pretty, but they want to deliver you thousands at a time, and ouch. Yeah. I have a small business, right?
When you're planning your week or month ahead, you don't want to have too much stock. You want the things to be moving. That all helps with cash flow. You've orders coming in. So how do you manage all that? I mean, you're basing it on previous figures and orders.
It's very, it's a little bit ad hoc. I produce what I can produce, and by the end of the week, it's gone. That is a good thing, but it's also a little bit less efficient than I would want it to be. So ideally, I would make like reasonably sized batches. Currently, I do like 10 molds at a time of a certain chocolate. I could do easily 20 with the machine that I have. But then also, I have all the molds. I need to store them somewhere. So here comes the next point. As I move them around currently, that works quite well. But I would want to make more than they need to be stored. They need to be stored in a chocolate fridge that has temperatures from 12 to 16 degrees and controlled humidity. I need to put that somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I can produce a little bit more and more efficiently distribute them as well. So that's a bit of a challenge that I currently have. I always said, like last year, my first year that actually saw the business take off a bit, I said, oh, I want to be like the early Kinnegar brewery. Yes. Remember that? I used to drink, or still do, Scraggy Bay. It's hard to find. I would run through the shops and collect the 1, 2, 3 bottles on the shelves. I would go to the local pub. The publican would say, roll his eyes, no, I can't get it. And I said, oh, that's where I want to be. I looked after, I sought after.
Yeah.
Very busy, but, you know. And now I'm afraid I'm sort of there a bit, and it's stressful because I want to give it to everybody and I can't.
Yeah. So what are, in rough terms, I mean, we've gone from producing a couple of hundred chocolates a week to now, what are we doing?
The molds are 320, 10 molds are 320 chocolates. So if I do 5 times that, it's like, it's not that much, 1500 a week. I could easily double that if I structure it that way, but that's it for now.
Yeah.
And of course, there are ways to increase and be faster and make more, but also at some point, then it becomes...
You lose control.
You lose control, you have to hire other people. And one of the things, I just need to say that, I was doing the corporate job before for, I know, 30 years. It was fun, but also it has its challenges. For instance, dealing with people. I want to make everybody happy. As the boss, that is impossible. Now I'm in my kitchen, basically alone, and I say, oh, this is relaxing. I like that point where I am, and a couple of people to help I could deal with, but I don't want to become, I say that now, I don't want to become a big business.
Yeah, I mean, you're happy in what you're doing, you've got that pride in the product, you're enjoying it, and you're getting huge feedback. You don't want to become the new Lindt chocolates of Europe.
I like the Lindt chocolates, but no, I don't. And then I see like programs which are good for people to food producers to get into Aldi or Lidl. And for a moment I think, wouldn't that? No, it wouldn't. Not for me. That's not what I want. I want to distribute through the small shops, the small businesses as well, right? Like Amelia's, like the Blue Goat, like the Counter in Letterkenny, like the markets. I love the markets because I get first-hand feedback from people. And I did not see that coming, that I would like that so much. So during the week I produce, on the Saturdays I'm in Dunfermline at the country market, and then maybe distribute a little bit through the country since I'm out there already. And the Sundays we go to Strand Hill, my wife and I, and the dog. And we sell there for the day, and then I say goodbye to the other sellers on the Sunday evening, say have a nice weekend, and I go like, oh no, the weekend is gone. It's back into the kitchen on Monday. But it's fun, and that's it.
And in terms of seasonality, I take it you'll get a peak coming up to Christmas. I mean, it's a lovely gift as well.
Christmas was amazing last year, or December was amazing, because the year before that I had started, it was relatively quiet still. Last December was bordering on the crazy. I said, oh, this is what Christmas is, actually, for the chocolatier. Interesting. I am a little bit stubborn at this point. I don't do Easter eggs. I don't do pink stuff for Valentine's Day. I mean, you can give them to your girlfriend like this, right? I'm a little bit stubborn there. I do this kind of bonbon and that kind of mold, and I focus on the fillings and the design and want to get that right. I could do chocolate bars as well, but there are others doing chocolate bars. There are not that many people doing the bonbons, and that's sort of the specialty there that I want to continue.
And how do you differentiate if somebody says between a bonbon and just a normal chocolate?
Ah, okay. So my wife calls them pralines, like pralinen, like in German. And I see that the food business name for them is the French bonbon. That is the filled chocolate shell with something. And there are other things that you can do. You can do truffles. That's other rolled things with coating on the outside. You can do the cut bits, the rectangular ones that are then dipped in chocolate and taken out. You see lots of them. Chocolate bars of all sorts and things, but they all have their own technical differences and, sure, and distinctions. Yeah. And when I started this, I had settled on this is what I want to do, and I looked in Donegal, and there was nobody in Donegal doing any of this. As far as I found, as far as I could see, and I thought, oh, this is actually quite handy. It'll fill that niche there. And of course, there is competition, friendly competition further south in the country, but that's fine. They're a little bit bigger than I am. They do sort of similar stuff, but they are a little bit further in business development, and that's fine. I'm quite happy where I am. If I'm the Donegal chocolate man, and I can sell everything that I can make in Donegal and surrounding counties, then I'm happy.
Now, input costs. I heard recently the price of cocoa is going up. You don't have a lot of control over your main ingredient, do you?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I look at that with trepidation and see what's happening. So far, it hasn't really hit me. So that's good. In the end, I have to look at my calculations and see how far I can sustain the current price. At some point, I might have to up the price a little bit. But I think it's still quite reasonable compared with what else is on the market. And yes, it is a specialty product, and it is a bit of a luxury product. I try to economize on the packaging. It should be nice, but not overly luxurious. The problem also that I have with selling at the market, all the really fancy packaging is closed. So you can't see them. On the website, you can see them. Then you have to order online. That's all that. But on the market, that wouldn't sell particularly well. Yep. So I need them to be transparent and visible, and that seems to work.
And where does the cocoa butter actually come from?
The chocolate I buy in Ireland, but it is coming from Belgium. It's mostly Callebaut, but there's lots of other companies as well. The cacao butter that I'm using, colored cacao butter, also can be from Callebaut or cacao berry or wherever they are. But I found a nice one-man company, one man, two children, and one wife. I found them on the internet, and is one man who's doing cacao butter as a specialty and also chocolates. But his cacao butters are really, really nice, a little bit expensive, but good. So I order them from somewhere in the UK, and that works for me too.
So just we'll have a look here at the kitchen. You've shown me the molds, and over here in the corner I see some sort of machine, which I will have to ask you to explain what exactly it is.
So with the chocolates, you have to temper the chocolate so that it's gets the crack that you have, it's nice and hard and shiny, so you have to temper that. You can do it the traditional way on the table with a slab of marble, and just you have to heat it up to 45 degrees, you have to cool it down again to 26 degrees and heat it up a little bit more, because you need what they call beta 5 crystals in the chocolate that make it snappy and glossy. You can do that on the table. Lots of work and messy. You can also do it in the microwave. That's all for small batches. I still do things in the microwave. You heat it up, and then you seed it with already tempered chocolate. You keep stirring it, and if you have a big batch, it takes ages to cool down again. You can do that. Or you can get a machine that basically does it all for you. You throw in the chocolate. It melts the chocolate. It beeps when it's at 45 degrees, and you throw in the seeds, like chocolate little bits, and then it tempers it. It cools it down, heats it up a little bit, and then you can start filling your molds. For the chocolate bonbons, you need molds, polycarbonate molds. They are nice and stable and hard, and you polish them, which is a problem when you have 50 of them and you have to polish them by hand with a bit of cotton ball, but that's what you do. Then you can paint them if you want to with the colorful cacao butter. That's also then tempered again. Then you fill them with all the chocolate that you have just tempered in the machine and tap out the bubbles in there, possibly, that might be in there. Tap that out, and then you have the shell clinging to the mold, and let that crystallize overnight, and you have your chocolate shell that you can then fill with the ganache that you make in a different pot, and fill that in, let that crystallize again overnight, and then you take more tempered chocolate and close the bottom of the chocolate, which becomes the bottom of the chocolate, top of the mold, and then you turn them out and you have pretty chocolates. Here, hopefully. And you need not that much equipment. You need the molds, you need scrapers, and you need something to temper the chocolate in. And that's it.
And as time goes on and you get busier, I suppose you have to make a decision on that work-life balance. You could be in here 7 days a week, 15-hour days, but you know, there comes a time you say, maybe I'm happy with where I am.
Yes, that's certainly the case. Last December was a busy time, Christmas coming, and we said, so my wife does actually come in here and help me package the chocolates, which is good because then I can make more in the meantime. We said, oh, let's just do another Saturday in the kitchen because we just need to get cracking. That turned out to be a little bit exhausting by the end of the month, and we were happy to close down for 2 weeks in January. But it's still the fun part. Developing a small business in Donegal is fun, getting to know people. Of course, seeing the money come in just in time is also nice. And working with a hotel, Loch Esk Castle, for instance, they did something on food and cooperation with the distillery, and I provided them with the whiskey bonbons. That is exciting. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a big order too. Like, oh my God.
So if you got a big order for several hundred of a particular thing, with a little bit of a time frame, you know, you can adapt.
With a little bit of a warning, I can adapt. Mm. Depends on where I am with the regular business. If I have just stocked the shops, then it's fine. Also, I mean, I'm not working too hard, not from 5 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. I could add a couple of hours and make it happen. I've done that a couple of times.
And away from this, when you're taking time out, what are you doing?
Currently, I'm learning bookkeeping. Properly. What else do I do? We have our little house here. The current project was selling the house in Amsterdam. So we have just done that. I came back with my wife last week. Now we have to fit stuff into the house here. That's sort of a bit of a project. Otherwise, we look at the garden. I do enjoy looking at the bees. I'm not sort of an interventionist beekeeper, but I look at them and occasionally get a little bit honey out of it. It's just fun watching them. And I mean, Donegal landscape is pretty, you know, so we walk around. I started delivering the chocolates, going to Glenveagh again, like after so many years I wasn't there, or to Dunloe, that's, oh, through the mountains. Look, oh, I remember from the 90s how they look. So then we're doing that again. It's fun.
And finally, as a place to do business, Donegal is good?
It is good. I really like the interaction with people, like I said. I think small businesses are quite well supported. I mean, that's my experience so far, and I certainly haven't used all support that I could get. But the local enterprise offices are great. Donegal is my kind of size and community that I really love working for and in. And it's not too big, it's not anonymous.
And that the whole networking thing in Donegal, you know, you can see that in businesses do help each other.
I see that. And I like doing like local, supporting local business, of course, as well. So that's fantastic. Everybody knows everybody else, nearly everybody else.
So are you living the dream?
I am living the dream. Of course, I have to say the grass is always greener on the other side. I did a lot of travel in the previous, I don't know, 30 years of work. And I do miss being places and seeing my friends in, I don't know, Montevideo or in Australia. I really miss them. But on the other hand, I don't miss the traveling process at all. And there was a pandemic in between that changes your mindset a bit as well. I'm happy in Donegal. I'm not here every single day. I will. We have children in Holland, so we will go there as well. But this is a bit of a paradise.
Yeah. So a good work-life balance.
A good work-life balance.
Well, my thanks to Axel Pavlik, the chocolate man from Donegal. That's it for this edition of Business Matters. If you want to contact me, you can email me at businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with the Faculty of Business at ATU Donegal. For a career in financial governance, consider the Level 9 MA in Governance and IT in Financial Services. Call 91 86206 or email donald.hannigan@atu.ie today.